views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today, we have a special guest. He's a friend of mine. His name is Kenneth Ede, and he is one of the top thriller political writers on the scene today. And, well, that's what his peers say about him, so, and that's what I would say about him. He's often compared to John Grisham, and he's been writing since 2013, and he's already won many awards. He is just going crazy, which is fun to see. His books are based on real things that are going on in the world. He really dives into current issues and then writes a fiction story around a current issue. So they're very well-researched topics, but if you just want to be entertained, you can just be entertained. But if you want to learn about a topic at the same time, you learn so much through his books because it's all factual based with a fictional character. And well, sometimes the characters are a composite of real people, but it's a fictional story and it's very entertaining. And he's going to come on and he's going to talk about a couple of his books and what he's learned through this whole process. And we're going to talk about GMOs with his first book, which was a huge sensation. It was called Involuntary Spy. And then his latest series called Paladine, which is about a vigilante that goes around and kills terrorists. And he's a bad guy, but yet he's a hero on social media, the alternative media. And it's really entertaining what he talks about. And so we're going to talk about that, but then we're also going to dive into what's going on with the Russian hacking and with the military-industrial complex and how he sees all that, because he lives in Russia about a third of the year. He lives in France for a big chunk of the year, and he is also lives in the United States. So he sees all perspectives. And what's interesting with him living in Russia right now, I actually recorded this from Russia. With him living in Russia right now, he gets to see the perspective on all this nuclear war nonsense and the hacking that people are talking about and all the propaganda that's been going out about Russia and the tensions between our two countries and how the Russians see that. And he gets to see both sides. So it's very insightful what he talks about. So I want to get right into this interview and welcome Kenneth Ede to the program. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Sarah. Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Oh, I'm excited to have you on. We did all those panels before with Johnny, and I'm so glad to have you on, and we can focus on all your knowledge and deep, you know, dig deep into some of this stuff, especially what's going on right now with Russia and this nuclear war nonsense. And I want to get into that. But first, I want to talk a little bit about your background. You started writing in 2013, and already your books are winning awards, and your peers are calling you one of our strongest thriller writers on the scene, which is amazing. You have also been compared to John Grisham, which is, I would think, is pretty cool. I mean, how does that make you feel to get so much critical acclaim so quickly?
Well, I'm flattered, and I'm glad that I've actually developed an audience, because I always wanted to write books, but Nothing got me going until I got worked up about a little insect called the bee. And my wife was doing a photo exhibition on why they're so important to us. So I started writing articles about bees, and then that got me into genetically engineered foods, and then I got really pissed off, so I decided to write a novel about it. So that's how it all happened.
Well, it is kind of weird how life works that way. And the next thing you know, you're one of the top novelists on the scene, which is really says something about the quality of your work.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's all about opportunity. And I think that all the stars aligned, you know, with the moon in the right position. And we have this publishing revolution where people who maybe couldn't have ever been published before get to be published. And I've got one book that was traditionally published, and I actually took it away from the publisher because they weren't selling it. So now it's selling pretty well.
Isn't that terrible the way it works now, right? Because the publishers don't always push your stuff. And so it can just sit there. Yeah. And so they don't do that much for you anymore. Well, how do you figure out what to write about? Because your work is, although it's fiction, it's very well researched and it follows typical political themes that's going on. How do you decide what to write about?
Well, I usually pick the issue first. And it's not that... it's not that I pick the issue. It's kind of like the issue picks me, because all my stories revolve around current events, right? So if something strikes me, I start to learn more about it. I start to question it, you know, because now you've got all this, you have to question everything you read now because you don't know what's true and what's not true. And then when I start to research into it, I start to think about, well, how would this happen in life? Because my stories always have to be real. So the story comes out of how would this issue come up in life, you know? And with my legal thrillers, my character, my main character, the protagonist, is a lawyer. So it's really easy with him.
Because that's your background.
Yeah, my background's a lawyer. And I take a case for a client who raises the issue that I want to talk about. And that's how it works.
Well, your first book, which was about the bees, it was called Involuntary Spy, right? It was about the GMO industry. Give us some more information about that book, and because you were mad, that's what got you going on it. What'd you find out?
I was mad.
Go ahead.
It was written during. I was inspired by Edward Snowden, actually, because he's the most famous whistleblower in the world right now, and I knew a lot about Russia, and I figured my scientist, who's the protagonist in the book, he's working on GMO foods. He's a biologist, and he starts to learn about some of the things about GMO foods that are dangerous to the body. And he goes to his boss and he says, well, you know, this is what I found out. And the boss says, bury it. Basically, we're not going to talk about that stuff. And then I found out in researching it that the government doesn't test GMO foods. They just assume that they're fine unless they hear otherwise. And they rely upon the chemical companies to tell them, oh, yeah, they're fine.
You mean the companies that are selling it? So not the people that are getting holes in their stomach or something?
No. And, you know, the World Health Organization has found that glyphosate probably causes cancer. And the reason behind most GMO foods is so that you can spray as much glyphosate as you want all over the farm, and it'll kill every living thing except for the crop that's genetically engineered to resist it.
Wow. And then we end up getting that crap, right? Somehow indirectly.
End up getting it. Now it's in the kids' cereal and the baby food, and it's so prevalent and it's so saturated, and we have such a strong lobby that's taken the power away from the people and put it into the chemical companies that there's no way to get it out of conventional foods, and you just have to seek alternatives. You have to try to find local foods and organics.
Well,
it's the only way to be safe.
Well, if you don't have enough money and if you're not educated on it, you're kind of in trouble. But now, is there another side to it? Why the government's doing it? Well, I mean, they know. So
yeah,
why are they doing
there's
it?
There's another side to it.
Besides
the people
just
that are
money?
Supposed to. Yeah. Well, no, it's all about money.
You're like, yeah, no. It. I mean, yeah. You know, they come out and they say that we have so many people, and just to feed the people, we're going to have a much more efficient system. But is that bunk? Mm-hmm. Can we get an efficient?
That's BS.
We can have an efficient system that feeds the people where we don't have this kind of crap going into our bodies.
Yeah. And the thing is about this excuse about feeding the people, that's not why they started to use GMOs. And that's not why 90% of GMOs are actually there. They are there to sell pesticides. And they're there to make sure that the farmers have to buy pesticides by Dow and Bayer and Monsanto, because they're going to be using their seeds that resist the pesticides, and they're tied to patent contracts, and they're not allowed to save their seeds. And it's a control of the entire food system based upon chemicals, which is the way we raise our food.
Doesn't the pesticides go in and explode their bellies or something, and so these bacteria will explode?
That's a different one.
Oh, okay.
It's not false. It's absolutely true. There's two kinds of GMOs with regard to pesticides. There's the pesticide resistant that resists glyphosate, and that's called Roundup. And then there's what's called a BT toxin, and that's a GMO based upon a natural bacteria that's found in the soil. And what they do when they engineer it into the plant is it becomes like several times stronger, and it's designed to explode the insides of insects' stomachs when they eat it. And the very few studies that have been funded, because most of them are funded by the industry, have found out that these actually breach the bloodstream of the mother to the baby. So the baby's actually getting this BT crap if the mother eats this kind of food.
But doesn't it explode our own bacteria and screw up our own gut? That's probably part of our problem.
It's called leaky gut. And there are several studies that say, yes, this is a culprit of leaky gut. So yeah, I can't eat GMOs. I try to avoid them if I can. I'm in Russia now and they don't allow them. So I feel, you know,
and they're much healthier over there, right? Is there less people? Are there less people who are heavy over there?
Yeah, in Europe also, there's people. I live most of the time in France, and there's
France. They're very people thin seem to, compared to here.
Yeah, they seem to eat whatever they want. They eat cheese and they eat things with fat in it and lots of carbohydrates, and they basically eat coffee and croissants for breakfast. I can't touch anything with bread.
Well, but it's amazing because I was in France and it looked like I was walking amongst a totally different, you're in a different world. They're so much thinner because you go to the United States and we're so heavy. And I think a lot of that comes from what we're eating, but it's so fascinating.
It does, Sarah.
Yeah, it has to, right? It absolutely has to.
Also, diabetes comes from what we, there's a lot, there's this intolerance to a lot of components of food, like gluten in the bakery products and things like that. I think this is all because of processed foods.
I had a woman the other day that told me she found out she had a gluten allergy and she stopped eating gluten and she lost 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. She didn't do anything. Wow. She goes, I did not die. She says, I lost 50 pounds when I stopped eating gluten.
Oh, she stopped eating bread, basically, probably. I mean,
that's incredible, though. That was an incredible. She's like, I can't believe it.
Well, there's so many things that we eat that are not nutritionally sound, that don't give us anything except satisfaction. And they fill up your stomach and that's it.
Well, it's fun because you get to dive into all these different topics and then write about them. That's how I feel with this radio show. I dive into all these different topics and then I just do little articles and you get to do a whole novel. But it's diving into different whole arenas and learning so much about it. And so I know in a small way, I know what you're what you're going through.
Oh, yeah, you do, because what I originally did, I was writing just op-eds for a local legal newspaper in Los Angeles. And I was doing the research for the op-eds, and then I put together a bunch of op-eds and made my first nonfiction book, which was Bless the Bees. So it's basically the same. It's just that mine is fiction, and the fiction is I want it to be real. I want people, when they read my stories, to think that it's really happening.
Because it could,
so many
right?
stories are
it
yeah
could.
Yeah. So many stories are just BS. The same kind of enemy, the same kind of hero, the same kind of, you know, we're going to save the world, you know. But why not save the world from something that's really dangerous to the world? That's what I think. You know, why not have someone save the world from GMO foods? Why not have someone save the world from overreaching governments that try to put people into prison indefinitely and don't give them a trial? You know, that's the kind of thing that I want to write about.
Well, so
it is.
Well, you've spent a lot of time in other countries. So that, do you believe you lived in France for a long time? You're living in Russia right now. Of course you lived in the United States. Does spending time in other countries really help your perspective on what's really going on? Because living just here in the United States, we're getting a certain kind of news, right? We get fed a certain amount. Now, living elsewhere, you get fed different perspectives. How does that change what you...
The key word there, Sarah, is get fed. I mean...
Wherever you are, right?
What if I told you that all news is fake news, and that you have to do the work yourself to figure out what's really true?
I would, after doing what I'm doing, you get to that point where you start to realize that. Well, and even everybody's perspective comes out in their own agenda, their own shows are just really...
Exactly.
It's these extreme... Exactly.
It's impossible to report the facts without putting opinion in it. But the thing is, what you're saying about different countries, it's absolutely true, because when I lived between the United States and France, I was like 1 month there, 1 month in France, 1 month there. It was it started during the Iraq War, and everyone in France was saying, well, are you for or against this? And I was looking at the difference in the TV coverage, you know, in the news coverage. And when I was in the States, everyone was flying the flags out their windows, their car windows. And when I was watching the news, they were showing you on how smart bombs hit things without killing anybody. It was like watching a video game, and it desensitizes you to violence. And then when you go to France, they're showing you blown apart babies and the kinds of things that you're seeing from Aleppo right now, because the government wants you to see those things in Aleppo. It's called perception management.
Yes. It's a way to make you feel a certain way about what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, it's a way to make you feel the way they want you to feel, because they can't have a war without the public supporting them. They learned that in Vietnam. So they got together in the Reagan administration time, and they said, well, what are we going to do? Well, how can we keep making all these tanks and planes and bombs? I mean, because that's a huge part of what the United States industry makes. How can we continue to sell this stuff, you know, if we can't have a war? And they said, well, we've got to spend millions of dollars basically on PR. That's what they do. They have their own PR firms.
Yeah, well, that's why I just did a show on nanotechnology, and there's just an explosion of inventions that are coming out. I just hope the United States, we can embrace some other economic developments and not be so military based, so that we can grow economically in other ways that's healthier for humanity.
Well, you know,
what's
a shame right now is what I think we could really do, because the United States is a leader in technology. I mean, especially in software technology and programming. I think that what we should probably concentrate on is alternative energy. I think we could become a leader in that industry.
Oh, well, we could become a leader in so many. You should listen to my nanotechnology show. It's all at a nano level, the alternative energy. I mean,
that stuff is fascinating.
Yeah, it's an explosion of stuff. There's going to be more inventions in the next 5 years than what's happened in the last 100 years. I mean, people don't even know what's going to hit them. But the economies, we could really flourish if we embrace it, and we embrace it in ways to develop our economy and not be based on things that are not good for humanity. Because I did a show right before that, how there's more veterans are dying of suicide than the amount of losses we had in Vietnam. I mean, and they're expecting that to increase. So, I mean, if we can say, okay, war really is hell. It's absolutely hell. And we know we have to do a certain amount of self-defense. We know we have to protect things. We know we have to have a certain amount. We got to keep advancing our abilities, but we don't need to go any farther than we need to, right? We need to be very reserved in this, because it's hell, and nobody can handle this. Go ahead.
But the United States is, I mean, the reason why we're so heavy into war is because of the military-industrial complex lobby. It's something that that President Eisenhower said, you've got to watch these guys because they're going to take over the country. Well, guess what? They have.
Yeah. And so we can't have war. We have to make sure we're smart. So we're not having war so that we can sell weapons and things. We need to have war to protect ourselves. Or there's some idiot out there that we have to protect ourselves from. But beyond
that, we haven't done that for 75 years.
Yeah, I know. There's bad stuff. So, you know, we need to find other ways. We need to find other industries and other, and mm-hmm. that's why I'm hoping nanotechnology just explodes and gives us a new healthy, you know, energy and aerospace and space and all sorts of things that we can do. That's just incredible. And so we don't have to be so focused on military.
And we're focused on fossil fuels. We're focused on everything now that's basically killing us. Chemical development of agriculture. I mean, what we're focused on is making money when we should be focused on the bigger picture, which is how are we going to survive through the generations beyond us? Okay.
And how do we just evolve as a species and be happier and, you know, all the things that make you thrive? Yeah. Let's get a little wiser.
with my books, maybe I've got a perspective on the evil side of human nature, but I always try to put a little light in there, you know, because we're not only the species in the world that kills for fun or no reason at all, but we also have a capacity for generosity and for thinking beyond the box and thinking beyond our own life and to the next family. What's going to happen, you know, in 100 years or 200 years? We also do that. And I think that's one of our virtues, but it sure balances out against the negative stuff.
Yeah, that's terrible. Well, okay, so let's talk about your next book, because you're really into the Russians and this next one, right? It's called Paladine. Explain what it is. And then after you get into that, I want to talk about this whole propaganda campaign with the Russians and nuclear war and get your whole background on it, because you're there, you're seeing it, you're seeing a completely different perspective. So I want to talk about your book and the theme of that, and then dive into your whole knowledge with the Russians.
Okay. Which is interesting, because I already wrote a sequel to the book, which is all about the Cold War. So, Paladine is a story that developed out of a character that was created not by me, but one of my readers, which is really interesting. What you were saying about, you know, people liking my books. Well, I've got people that read everything that I write. And one of them happened to be a ex-soldier who was involved in covert operations in South America in the 80s. And he was a career soldier who had a lot of stuff to say about, you know, what was good about the military and what was bad about the military.
Isn't it amazing the people you meet when you do stuff like this? This is great. Keep going.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, I found out about death squads, which was shocking. And Paladine is a story about a guy who's trained to be a killer. And he's such a good killer that they take him out of the army and they throw him into CIA, and he does covert operations, which is basically assassinations. And then he decides he wants to get out and be a normal person. But he finds out that killing people is all that he really knows how to do. And fortuitously, he ends up killing a terrorist and saving a bunch of people in America, and becomes a private killer for hire to kill terrorists. That's what it's about.
Oh, geez. And then he becomes, I think you're what I understand. And then he becomes a hero on social media and everything.
Yeah, he's, you know, now we have what I like to call hip pocket journalists. People that will record stuff and put it on Instagram and write blog articles about it, and they've got audiences just like the mainstream media, some of them. I mean, we've got stars developing on YouTube. Yeah.
Well, they actually, so, some of their episodes get more than a cable news channel.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't
yeah. It? Oh, yeah.
So they give my character the name Paladine, which comes straight out of the, you know, medieval times. And right now they're using this type of a name for characters in video games that are heroes that are trying to save the world and they're killing all the bad guys. But he's a bad guy himself, my character. So he's an anti-hero. He's one of the bad guys. But like one of my readers said, I'm rooting for the bad guy.
So, he's a bad guy, but a good guy, right? He's a vigilante.
He's a vigilante, and people like vigilante stories. But you know, if you delve deep into his character, I give him a lot of humanity. I give him a dog. I give him some romance, and so people can identify with him. Because if I didn't make him human, he'd seem just like a monster, and he is a monster. But you know, he's. I think people. People are pissed off about terrorism, and they see my character going out there and basically kicking butt, and they're applauding him on.
Because he's at least like helping, because everybody feels helpless and they don't feel like anybody's solving the problem. So if you get somebody like that, it's like a vigilante going after rapists or something. I would be like, yeah, you know, although I mean,
nobody is solving the problem. I mean, It's again all about money. We're supporting the sequel to the book is about Paladine meeting his Russian counterpart when he was going back to work for the government and doing some assassinations in Syria during the civil war. And what we're all about over in Syria is about overturning the Assad government. We don't really care what happens after he's out. And recent history shows us when we topple a government in the Middle East, the Islamic extreme groups from one to the other come and take over. So that's how we got ISIS. And we're doing the same thing in Syria. We're supporting.
Why are we so hell-bent on getting rid of Assad?
Well, it's all about putting a pipeline through from Qatar to Europe. And right now we're having a problem with Turkey because Turkey is working with Russia to do a pipeline and they're messing up everyone's plans. But that's what it's all about. It's all about oil. It's all about business.
Why couldn't
they
get
farm sales?
Why couldn't they just negotiate with Assad and get it done? He didn't want to do it. He didn't want anything because they don't have. Do they have a central bank in Syria?
You know what? I don't know.
See, I don't think
they probably do.
Well, yeah, but controlled by the European, you know, by the same central bank that's controlling everything else.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think they do either.
We need to take a short break and we'll be back in a moment.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation, but did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes. That's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Badili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's ATANAMethod.com. And sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhyay and Steve Tanijo on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Pat. I am so thrilled. I've had the honor of working with Leslie Fontaine for the past year or so, and what she has created in her hit program, Sheer Alchemy, transcends what most of us get to listen to or hear in any point in time in our lives. But beyond that, Leslie is working with people all over the world, and she has created something phenomenal based on the feedback and input from the Archangels, from the Ascended Masters, from the Light Beings, and most importantly, from each and every one of you. So if you want to change your life, if you're ready to step into your own version of sheer alchemy, please give Leslie a call at 678-665-3366. And why? Because this is what you're going to be prepared to do. Be amazed, and on your part, connect with the Ascended Masters that are there to help you custom make the life that you are meant to live.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Welcome back. This is Sarah Westall, and we're talking to Kenneth Ead, and he's an award-winning political and thriller writer that's coined by his peers as one of the top writers on the scene, often compared to John Grisham. He is amazing. But before we get back into that conversation, I want to remind you that this show is available all over the place where the finest podcasts can be found. What do they say? Where all fine books are sold, where all fine podcasts are listed. Actually, that's true. We're over 100 different digital channels. I now have a YouTube channel as well, which is growing day by day. It's just been up for the last few weeks. Love it if you go there and subscribe and watch videos as well. And of course, you can go to my website at sarahwestall.com and you can hear all of my past shows. I also have some articles and well-researched topics there with charts and things on all the shows that I do. And we are also on the Global Star Satellite, which is at 5 p.m. Eastern Time each week, and we get a national audience there. So any of your friends that want to listen to the show may be able to do it there if they have satellite access, or, of course, on any of the digital channels or YouTube. So let's get back to our interview now with Kenneth Ead.
But the pipeline, why couldn't they just, because Russia didn't want to cooperate and they're more on Russia's side? I mean, what's... I don't understand. Why couldn't they just negotiate something?
Yeah, they're Syria is definitely on Russia's side. Russia has been supporting Syria for many, many years, even before when it was when it wasn't Russia, when it was a Soviet Union. There's a long history there. In fact, in this whole the Soviet Union used to be kind of a buffer. All of the countries that are now in really hot spots were controlled by or under the influence of the Soviet Union. And so it's a long, long history of cooperation together. And you see now that Russia is coming to Assad's aid. I mean, that's what's happening.
Well, Russia came in and just blew the crap out of ISIL and got them out of the, you know, because the pipelines, they were burnt.
Yes and no. I mean, they've come back. ISIL's come back into Palmyra, which is really... You know, when I researched my second novel on Paladine, it really broke my heart. Mm-hmm. I like to travel, as you mentioned before. I want to see these places. I want to see Palmyra. Not anymore. I mean, it's not there anymore. It was a pretty well preserved ancient Roman village, and in Aleppo they have the oldest castle in the world. And Aleppo is one of the oldest civilizations. Oldest cities that we have. And we've blown the crap out of all the cultural heritage sites that are supposed to be protected. I think this should be a war crime.
That's a shame. Oh, that's terrible.
It's horrible.
People that are... So, and this is all... you believe it's all just for getting a pipeline through?
Pipeline and arms sales and you know, we have partners in the Middle East that are more important than Syria, like Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And we want to make sure that they're the ones who profit, you know. not the Russians friends.
Well, that's
here's how we get into the Cold War.
Jeez, that's why nanotechnology, we could get different sources of energy, we could all explosion of different industries could be so healthy. We could stop doing this stuff. Give these people
you made me curious.
I've got to
listen to your show now on nanotechnology.
Oh, you got to listen. I had one of Jim Phillips, who's the CEO of Nanomech, and they're actually doing the military's, the next version for the military's combat gear. And they're also, he talked about how to do spaceships that can turn on it, not spaceships, aircraft, you know, planes that can turn on a dime. There's just, you know, an energy and just, all sorts
sounds
of things.
Sounds like Star Trek.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's the next industrial. I mean, it's as big as the internet. You know, it's just huge. And so I'm just hoping we can have a new evolution of humanity with just like the industrial age, but industrial revolution brought in and the printing press brought in a whole nother evolution of humanity. I'm hoping something like this could really bring out, we could get out of this old paradigm of military and oil and conflicts, and we could have an evolution of humanity through something as great as science and technology. Now, there's always a dark side to that, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, editing the human genome and messing ourselves up and, you know, screwing up the space-time continuum or something. But It, there's some serious consequences, but there's also so much bright light in this, and we can evolve as humanity. But we gotta, you gotta go forward and see what we can do with it. But no, what is the deal with all these propaganda campaigns about Russia hacking? I mean, what is that?
I can only give you my opinion, and of course it's. It's tainted with a little bias because ever since September, I've been in Russia visiting. I spend probably 3 months out of the year here. But, before the election, before the campaigns, we heard a lot about Ukraine and Crimea and those things, right? And there were sanctions against Russia for that. But then all of a sudden, during the campaigns, we started hearing about the Russians are preparing for nuclear war. And I talked to people around here. Yeah, I talked to people around here and they were just laughing. They're going, really? What are we doing? And I said, well, everyone's going into bomb shelters, millions of people. And they're going, where's the bomb shelters? We're, you know, everything that's underground is garages now. there's cars there. So, they just couldn't fathom.
It was just made up stuff essentially.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
And you get to see that paradigm because you're there and you understand the U.S. culture. And so you're watching this news, you're seeing that. And so you're just like, oh gosh. When you're here as an American, you see it and you're like, maybe this is really happening. But since you're there and you can see it, you can see it firsthand that they're lying.
Yeah, and then you listen to someone like Bill Clinton the other day when he cast his or was yesterday, I guess. When I'm a day ahead of you, so it's hard for me to keep track. But he cast his vote as an elector in the Electoral College, and they were interviewing him, and he was blaming Hillary's defeat on the Russians and the FBI. I mean, well, come on, if you have something to hide and it gets exposed, shouldn't the voter know about it to begin with? And secondly, the whole thing about the Russian hackers is, they could be Russian, but what evidence do they have? They don't have any. It's all speculation. And
what did they do? How did Russia become such a mastermind manipulator of the U.S. It just doesn't even make sense.
Well, Russia and China have a lot of smart people who can do this kind of stuff.
Oh, sure. They can hack, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that the government's involved. If you want to accuse someone of something, you better have evidence, and they just don't have it.
Well, and what did they do? They hacked and showed real information of what you did? Or are they trying to say they hacked and then created fake news? Is that?
No, no. What they're they say they created fake news for one thing. They're saying that, but the main argument is that they hacked the DNC and they gave the emails, the Podesta emails and the other stuff that they found to WikiLeaks. And Julian Assange, who's the head of WikiLeaks, says no. That came from an inside leak at the DNC.
And what's so crazy about that is the emails, if it showed something bad and it showed that you were colluding, they colluded and rigged the election against Bernie Sanders and they did some bad stuff, then is that so bad? I don't get it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before is, you know, if you're exposing corruption, don't the voters have a right to know about it? I mean, okay, a lot of people heard about the corruption. I mean, basically, the way I felt about it was I didn't like Donald Trump and I didn't want to vote for him and I didn't like Hillary Clinton and I didn't want to vote for her. That's the bottom line.
Well, no, but we just had a bad situation.
Yeah, I watched her interview on TV when she found out that Muammar Gaddafi had been killed, and he wasn't just killed. I mean, they didn't hang him, they didn't shoot him by firing squad. They, you know, raped him with knives and they brutally tortured and murdered
him. That's terrible.
And she was laughing. She was laughing. She said, "Well, we came, we saw, he died." I mean, this. I'm thinking. It'd be great to have a woman president because it's going to bring this insight and this maternal touch and this soft spot that the men don't have, but she doesn't have that.
That's not what I mean when I want a female president. Yeah, I want the female leadership, the female wisdom. Just like we want the male wisdom and leadership, we want the female side to come in who represents that greatness. And that's not what we're talking about.
Yes, that's what I want. But, you know, and the other thing is she's got this background with the Saudis and they're giving her foundation lots of money. And then she's negotiating billions of dollars in arms deals. And now the Saudis are dropping the bombs that we sold them on Yemen. You know, it's obvious that she and the military industrial complex, who also contribute to her foundation, are pretty tight. And you know, it's a lot easier to sell billions of dollars of tanks and airplanes and strategic sophisticated equipment if we're fighting a big foe like Russia than fighting, you know, people on camels and in jeeps. I mean, we don't need those sophisticated things to fight wars against terrorists who are basically just car bombers and loosely military groups, you know, forming together with limited equipment. We don't need that big power. But if we have a big enemy like Russia, we absolutely need it. And a nuclear enemy. So then we need to up our nuclear arsenal.
Although we don't need to up our nuclear. We can already destroy humanity with what we have. So I don't know why we need to up that.
Well, that's what's going to happen if we have another Cold War. And that's where they were headed. And then I made up my mind then, you know, there's no way I can vote for her. It's just impossible. I don't want another Cold War. So I think now with Trump's attitude, I mean, at least what we hear from him, I don't think there's going to be an escalation against Russia, but I could be wrong.
Well, it sounds like he wants to be more practical about how we use the military. He wants it to be very strong and he wants it to be, but he wants it to be smarter and leaner and do what we need it for and not just go fight all these wars. And he wants to utilize other people around the world, our friends, to deal with stuff too.
You know, that all makes sense. But what scares me about it is he doesn't have any experience and doesn't really know what he's doing. So then people say, well, then he'll hire people that know what they're doing. But you know what? When you hire people that know what they're doing, you're hiring people who are insiders in the government, who people who are in private industry who have their own agendas, and we're back to the old elite running the country again.
Well, I don't know if you're ever going to find somebody who's experienced in every area anyways, right? Because let's say you get a great military mind or a great international person. They might not understand local business and trade and it's just I don't know if it's possible to get somebody who's experienced
but I'm just afraid that I mean, I just really like to test his IQ and put it up against George Bush and see which one is smarter.
Although you had to be pretty darn smart to make it through Wharton, and he did. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Or else you got to pay your way through.
Well,
which
yeah.
certainly could be done.
Yeah.
But anyways, the whole thing about the Cold War was that's what you know, all this Russian bashing was kind of part of Hillary's campaign, and that's why it's kind of died down and we don't hear as much about it anymore, except now the Democrats are saying, well, we've got to put our foot back in the game, you know. We got kicked out big time. We got our ass really beaten. So this Russian bashing is starting up again, and it's kind of like sour grapes. Oh, we lost the election because of the Russians. Come on.
Well, what does the Russians think? What does the Russians think? Yeah. I mean, are we creating instability and tensions because we're blaming, or do they just think we're kind of idiots because they know that they're lying?
Well, they just think it's ridiculous. And basically they don't think we're idiots, but they just think it's ridiculous. And they think that, you know, they're concerned with their day-to-day lives. It's not an easy life here in Russia. So they're not cheerleading for what's going on in Syria. They're not, you know, they're concerned about it, but it's not part of their daily life. So, you know, they really see America as a partner and a friend rather than an enemy. And most Russians like Americans. That's what I've been in Russia for back and forth for 20 years.
Well, because most Russians know that we're not, the average person's not what they see in the propaganda, right?
Pretty much. I mean, they hear something like, you know, preparing for nuclear war, and it's the reaction is shock. It's shock. It's so surprising to hear. It's just unbelievable for them.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of scary to me. We, you know, we both grew up in the 80s. You might have grown up, you might be a little older than me. I don't know, but I was in.
Yeah, I am.
I was in high school in the 80s. And, you know, it's mm-hmm. You just remember the Cold War, and we're all part of that, and the whole Reagan years and things. It's just, mm-hmm. it was a very interesting time. We have enough weapons now, like I said, to destroy, yeah. to create the Planet of the Apes. We don't need that. We don't need to invest in that. We just don't.
No.
We need to invest in nanotechnology and other things. And as a byproduct, yeah, maybe we can improve some of these, and we can improve our defense with it, of course. But we don't need mm-hmm. to create more warheads pointing at different countries so that we can destroy the whole world another five times over. It just doesn't make sense.
We don't. And, you know, during the Bush administration, we backed out of the ABM treaty. And that was a big mistake, because Russia said, OK, if you back out of the treaty, then we're going to go ahead and develop our systems, our more sophisticated systems, because we know that's what you're going to do. And Bush people said, go ahead. And so they did. They did go ahead. And, you know, now we've got more sophisticated weaponry on both sides. And it's just insane. It's insane.
Well, so, okay. So what are you going to do with your next book? What are you diving into now?
Well, believe it or not, Paladin is going to get involved. He's going to find out about a human trafficking ring that's providing girls to Syria, which is actually happening.
Another light subject.
And he's going to find out that they're also doing it in Europe for profit, which is also really happening, believe it or not. So that's the next subject, and I'm a few chapters into that story already.
Oh, geez. So what's happening there?
It's called It's called Traffic Stop, with a FFICK, Traffic Stop.
So what is really happening there? I mean, why women are being trafficked into Syria for why?
Well, to be the wives of these ISIS fighters. And of course, you know, there's more, they'll have more than one husband in quotation. They're basically being provided as toys to these ISIS fighters to keep them going. And they're talked into it by recruiters. ISIS is using social media, basically, in Europe and also in America. And they're reaching out to these young people who are Muslim, who are feeling frustrated in their life, as a lot of young, as a lot of millennials are now, want to be part of a bigger thing. And they're feeding them propaganda and not telling them, you know, well, we want you to come to Syria to be a sex slave, but that's what they do. We want you to come to Syria to help the troops, to you know, feed the people, to help people in hospitals and blah, 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 blah. And then they get them to Syria and they become prostitutes, basically. And they're sold in slavery.
That's terrible. So
it's horrible.
And no one's really helping them out. It's just kind of another disaster.
No, nobody cares. But I mean, nobody cares about the human trafficking that's going on in civilized countries either, which it is. I mean, basically what happens is they recruit you out of an Eastern European country like Russia, or they come from Romania or somewhere like that. And they're telling you, look, we'll get you a job and a visa, a work visa, and you're going to be a waitress, or you're going to be a cook, or you're going to be a bartender, or this, that, or the other thing. And then they travel as a group. So they say, all right, let's collect the passports. So we're going to go through passport control, which they do. And then they just don't give the passports back.
That's terrible.
And it's horrible.
It's
they keep them in a a dorm, and they put them out in the strip bars at night, and that's how they do it.
And then how do they keep them there? They're too scared to leave. Are they by
they tell
gunpoint?
Them that they tell them that they will kill their families if they don't cooperate, and they give them like a year, and then they say after a year's service, then you can go back home. But they don't give them hardly any money that they earn. They keep most of their money.
They just give them enough to eat and just get by, probably, right? Because they need them to stay alive.
They feed them and house them, and that's about it.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I know that China has this big problem right now where they're taking people who are in jail, prison, and they're harvesting their organs. And there's a big black market with organs coming out of China. It's a major issue there. Yeah.
Horrible.
That's another reason why nanotechnology, that's behind organ growing, because you can grow organs that are specifically for a person's body. So it can remove a black market. You know, I mean, if you got enough money to buy an organ, you probably have enough money eventually to grow one that's going to work perfectly for your body. So
I would think so.
Yeah. So there are some bright lights in some of this new technology, I think. But
I got to listen to your show. I'm intrigued.
it's and he is so fun to listen to, because he is just so great. He's an entrepreneur and an inventor, and he understands big picture thinking. And he was a pioneer in the internet, created all these different new technologies there. He was Time Inventor of the Year for one of their inventions in the mid 2000s. I think it was like 2006. So it's just a really fun person to talk to. Yeah. But you got to listen to it. But you are super fascinating to talk to, too. I think it's perfect for.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's a little dark subject, but it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect for in between Christmas and New Year's, where people just want to, you know, think about some of these things. They can get one of your books, read it, really learn about. You know, if they're into thrillers or if they're into that genre, you're one of the best. And it's for me.
Oh, thank you.
For me, I love talking about it, because this is what I dig into all these subjects. And I know that you're digging into it more than you have to make it believable. So you really research it, which makes it.
I have to make it believable, but at the same time, it has to be entertaining. And, you know, if people want to just read a thriller and just enjoy it, they can do that. They don't have to look at, I put my research in the back of each book. So they don't have to look at my research. They can just not read the afterword and say, oh, that was a fun story. I'll start another one. Because that's, you know, you don't have to, it's believable, because in any fictional story, you have to suspend your disbelief. So it's really easy to suspend your disbelief when what I'm talking about is a real thing really happening, or a real place, or a character based on a real person, or a composite of different people.
And of course, we don't have time for the whole interview, but you can hear it on any of my other digital platforms, or it will air, the whole show will air on the satellite this Wednesday at 5 p.m. And for now, I hope everybody has a wonderful, wonderful New Year's, and I hope your New Year's resolutions come true and you can stay disciplined. Maybe you can lose that extra 20 pounds you need to lose. Maybe just get rid of gluten in your diet. A lot of people get rid of gluten. Amazing as it sounds, they get rid of gluten, and without dieting, you lose all that extra weight. Try it. It might work for you. But anyways, have a fantastic New Year's.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time. And learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.